Hey folks, you're listening to the Get Balanced Podcast with Dr. Donnie, episode 56.
Welcome to the Get Balanced Podcast with Dr. Donnie. If you're a firefighter, law enforcement officer, or emergency medical professional who would like to improve your family relationships, your physical and mental health, and want to have success at work and at home, well, this show is for you. Welcome to the Get Balanced program. Let's get started.
Hey folks, this is Dr. Donnie, and I am telling you, I'm excited that the Get Balanced Podcast has an official sponsor, and I want to tell you a little bit about them. And it is FirstNet, built with the AT&T. And what I want to tell you about them is probably part of it is that many of you already know this, but for first responders and frontline workers, communication, as we know, is not a luxury, but it's a lifesaver. And that's why FirstNet, built with AT&T, was created. Now, the FirstNet mission is to make communication faster, safer, and more collaborative for first responders and other public safety personnel. FirstNet helps first responders and frontline workers connect when they are on and off duty. They get access to priority and preemption capabilities. This means they connect to the network first. In emergency situations, first responders move to the front of the line to access critical bandwidth they need to send and receive, whether it's voice, data, video, images, and text. Now, during an emergency, FirstNet is a critical connection between first responders to technology and also to each other, giving them access to information quickly and when every second counts. With FirstNet, first responders and frontline workers get a highly secure, reliable network with 24/7, 365 customer care and monitoring. Now, to get more information about FirstNet, go visit your local AT&T store or visit firstnet.com. Now, let me go in and introduce our guest for this week. The Get Balanced Podcast with Dr. Donnie, and my special guest today is Bobby Kipper. And I'll tell you, there could be probably about 100 different things I believe, Bobby, you could talk about right now. But as we were talking right before I hit the record button, that got a lot going on. But Bobby is one of the biggest things I think you have going on is the founder of the National Center for Prevention of Community Violence. You also have the Kipper Group. I mean, you're a best-selling author. I mean, you've got a lot going on. So actually, why don't you tell us a little bit about some of these initiatives, where you've been spending your time, and a little bit of your background, too, because also retired police officer with Newport News. Is that correct?
That's correct, in Virginia. Yes, sir.
Yeah. So let me turn it over to you a little bit and tell the folks a little bit about you that don't know you.
Well, first of all, thanks. This is an honor to be with you on your podcast. I have followed you for a long time, and I know that our schedule was up and down, and finally we were able to connect, and I just really appreciate what you do, how you stand in the gap for first responders. It's really important, and I'm just honored to be a guest today.
Thank you.
I'm a blessed guy. I would say that starting out. I've had some opportunities that come my way that maybe some people didn't have the opportunity to gain. And I started my police career when I was 20 in Newport News, Virginia, as a young police officer. And of course, I learned a lot in policing. I spent 26 years there. And I didn't leave police work because I didn't like police work. I left it because I wanted to start another career and maybe build a greater message for people on a national level and sort of get away a little bit from one community to try to involve myself in a number of communities. A short time after that, I was recruited by the Attorney General of Virginia, a friend named Jerry Kilgore, who had me become the director of Virginia's Gang Reduction Program. And that I spent 4 years in his administration before I started the National Center for the Prevention of Community Violence, and also a consulting group where we do training. First responders training and training even at the corporate level. I had a fortunate to be to land my first book deal after I finished up in Richmond, Virginia with the Attorney General's office. And that first book was called No Colors, 100 Ways to Keep Gangs from Taking Away Our Community. We had some real success in Richmond with some of the projects we were developing. And again, one of the things I would say about, you know, any success I've had is because I try to surround myself with good people. It's really those that hold me up that make me better. And I want to give all the kudos to them at the start of this podcast to let you know that I'm only where I am today because people believed in me. They gave me a chance. And one of those people is David Hancock, who's the CEO of Morgan James Publishing out of New York City. When he published that first book, I had always wanted to write a book. I never really felt like that I would be able to, which I will talk about later. Everybody has that dream. They need to follow that dream. Because when I wrote one, it became successful. And to date, I've written six, and several of them have landed on the best-selling market, which, again, it's not because of me. It's because I'm blessed, and people need to hear the message. And everyone listening has a message. I just would encourage them to get out there.
Hey, it's amazing, six books. But before I get into your books, Bobby, I'm really interested in you sharing a little bit about what your not-for-profit organization, you know, the National Center for Prevention and Community Violence, what kind of things are you doing out there?
Sure. We started this nonprofit based on the fact that we believe that violence is a process and not an event. And we knew that there were a number of organizations in America that really address, you know, the post-trauma and the post-violent issues, including after school shootings, after, you know, community shootings. But we really focused on prevention. And what we're doing in our nonprofit is focusing on interrupting the process of tragedies before they become tragedies. And so that's one of the things that I wanted to found the organization on the principles that, do we have to go there, Donnie? Do we have to go to violence? And so that's the cornerstone of what we do as an organization. I've surrounded myself with a great board, an advisory team nationally, and a great executive team, as well as some great people, you know, some of them that work for us, and they really hold us up and do really well. So right now, there are a number of initiatives that we're doing that we're spending a lot of time on. Obviously, you know, community prevention with the rise of violent crime is something that concerns us, and we're involved in that, you know, that area as well. And then also officer health and wellness, the first responder health and wellness is something that we're really doing. We're even working on a large Justice Department project to build a platform for starting with policing to provide a telehealth network for officer health and wellness. So we've been pretty busy, but I will tell you that there's no end to what we do, and we need more, you know, obviously people joining our hands and helping out. But I've been really proud of the small team that we had and what we've accomplished. We are changing communities as we speak. And so that really makes it beneficial for all of us when you can get up and have impact.
Oh, absolutely. And Bobby, if you would, I mean, six books is absolutely incredible. And I know you have bestsellers out there. I love the first time I talked to you, I remember I went out and purchased one of your books, and, you know, it's so much about leadership and things like that. But your latest book, what I would like to for you to talk a little bit about on, because it's about spiritual wellness, right?
Absolutely.
And for all the listeners out there, if you recall, and many of you, or if you're new to my program, my work-life balance process has been, and where my research has been, and in my latest PhD study came out 2 years ago. But when I look at work-life balance, I started looking at how well we take care of ourselves and how does that impact work-life balance. And when I looked at how well we were taking care of ourselves, I was looking at four components, self-care components. It's our physical care, our psychological care, our social, and then our spiritual care, you know, because whether, you know, and these are universal, as you know, Bobby, these are universal self-care needs, right? I mean, every right. human needs has this need of physical, psychological, social, and spiritual. And I looked at that, and sure enough, at the end of my research and for years, it came out with a model like, you know what, the better we take care of ourselves in all these different health quadrants, the more effective we are at work and at home. I'd like to get your thoughts on that, if you're a believer of that, that the better we take care of ourselves, we can actually be more effective in our careers and our home life. What's your reaction?
No doubt. And Donnie, I appreciate you being in that space, because I can tell you there are a lot of people, and you and I have had this conversation, there are a lot of people that run away from that space because they think, okay, well, it's reaching too deep into where people are at. But, you know, there are a couple things I would talk about. First of all, one thing that I tried to do in law enforcement, and I still try to train law enforcement officers, especially new law enforcement officers, and I would share this with all first responders, because whether you're a firefighter, an EMS, or even a dispatcher, you come up with some incredible situations that have got to have an impact on you. And I don't really care what your organization says. I know from a human perspective, it has impact on you. And that impact is not normally very positive. You know, first responders don't respond to issues where people are doing really well. They respond to issues where people are not doing well. So that's lasting. And some of that really impacted me. But I really try to tell people all the time, do not let this job shape your personality, but become a good person, and you will do a good job at being a first responder. I think that's important. That's critical. And so I tried to, you know, even though there were times when, you know, I even doubted my own ability to reason with that factor. I was fortunate, Donnie, to be raised in a very Christian home by a Southern Baptist deacon. So there was no question about, you know, having spiritual nurturing as part of my upbringing.
Kept you in line is what you're saying.
Kept me in line. That's right. I remember one day he and I got into a little disagreement, and I told him I was going to my room, and he called me over to his side and he said, "You don't have a room. You have a place where I allow you to keep your things." but when I became a police officer, it was not hard for me to understand the pecking order. I understood it. But there were times in my own spiritual walk when I know there was a time that, you know, that led me down a road to handle a couple of infant deaths in 1 week. And that was the cornerstone of me writing my own spiritual journal over a period of time. I wanted to get back to where I felt like that I needed to be. And it was really important. One of the things that, you know, the Purpose-Driven Life by Rick Warren, who's a friend, the first sentence of that book says, you know, it's not about you. And I want to tell you how much that really hit me hard. When I read Rick's book, what a great guy and what a great read. Mm-hmm. But the interesting thing about that is that for some of us, we feel like that when we get this job and when we get sworn in, we're a little bit above, you know, what life is all about, but you're never above that. Life is life, and it's incredibly hard and it's incredibly cruel on some of the things that you have to deal with. So I always really believe that, you know, we should search out for something bigger than ourselves to believe in. And, you know, for me, obviously that was my faith, my Christian faith, but for people, there are other things that they obviously choose to turn to. And I certainly understand that. But if you go through life and you go through this job as a first responders without that anchor, without something to hold on to, then you really create, it really creates a real void. So again, I want to thank you for standing in that space. I know you and I've talked about doing some writing together. I'm still really excited about that, by the way. But I think we need to talk louder about it recently. And I know you're leading up to my latest book, which is Roll Call, Spiritual Wellness for Law Enforcement, Today's Law Enforcement Officers. That was actually, to be honest with you, the spiritual journal that I wrote over a 1 year period. I sent it to my publisher about 6-8 months ago and asked him if he would look at, if he thought there'd be something that the New York Publishing Group would like. And I got a call from the publishing company about a day or two later saying, not only do we like it, we think it's the start of a national platform to help save, you know, our law enforcement industry today. And so I'm so blessed and gracious. Morgan James Publishing decided to publish that book. And that's come out, as you're well aware, you've seen me on LinkedIn and social media. That's come out within the last 3 months. And I hope that that book helps a lot of people. I did not think that my journal would actually become a book, but you know it did, and I'm blessed, and I just hope it helps people have impact in their own spiritual life. And I just want to say this about spirituality. I was at an event recently with the police chief, the current police chief of my hometown of Newport News, and I know his faith, and we were getting ready to go out and do an introduction of our book in my hometown, which was phenomenal. I mean, I can't tell you how warm it felt for me to be back home and speaking at the church I grew up in. And there's a police chief and the mayor. And But that wasn't the important thing. The important thing was when I looked at the police chief and we started talking before the event, and I looked at him and I said, Steve, it's okay to share your faith. It's okay to share your faith. Yeah. And it's okay to talk about it. And so I'm just excited. You know, I feel like sometime, you know, I'm free. The chains are off. The handcuffs are off. Now I've got a book to talk about it. And it's an exciting time, not only for me individually, but for us as an organization. And we hope spiritual wellness grows in the first responders industry. And I'm going to tap you as an ambassador to help me do that. So we're excited.
Well, I will accept that. you just let me know and I will accept that, because that is something I definitely would love to get involved in. And let me ask you a little bit about, and I love how you say that, it's okay to talk about your spirituality.
Yes, it is.
And in our culture today, our politics, you know, we can't help keep politics. I mean, they're in everything.
That's right.
They are. They're in everything. It's sort of like whether we want to talk about spirituality or not, it affects us, right? So, absolutely. You know, but just as politics. But in today's climate, Bobby, talk a little bit about, you know, helping people find that courage to talk about their spirituality. And I'm sure, you know, roll call, I can't wait to get to do the reading on it, is giving them courage, but also it's like, you know, we need to really understand who comes first, don't we?
No doubt about it. And I think that what we've done is, and I'm really upfront about this, I speak about this publicly. I've actually written articles that have been published about the issue of law enforcement shaming in America. And, you know, I mean, it's almost like a beatdown time. I mean, I've never, you know, it all goes back to, you know, political grandstanding in a lot of ways. And I, you know, public safety is a bipartisan issue, and we haven't gotten there yet. And yeah. The factor of it is that, you know, we got to get above the noise, Donnie. We have got to get above the noise. The noise is not doing us any good. I mean, I'm on a number of panels, obviously, to talk about these issues. And one of the things I always say when they want to talk about defunding, I mean, that's the first issue. It's not defunding policing. It's defunding public safety. I mean, they're the only people to stand in the gap. And then I was on a recent call and they talked about systemic issues in policing. Well, the bottom line is that 25-year-old police officer that gets out of his car in the morning had nothing to do with building your system. That system's been in place for a long, long, long time. And it's going to take a while to reform and change it. So I think I always joke with people about this. I think we're like the Scarecrow and the Wizard of Oz when they were asking for directions and he pointed both directions. And I think that's where we're at as a country. We're trying to look for blame instead of solutions. And I'm hoping and I'm praying that we can get beyond that and get to the point where we're talking about solutions. And I believe that like policing reform in this country will start with, you know, better taking care of our officers to begin with. They're in a position right now where they're down and out, and we need to cease that. We need to pick up. You want them to be better trained. You want them to be more professional. You want people to be more responsive. Then you got to take care of them. And that's what we're doing as an organization. And, you know, I refuse to back off of that because it is the way it needs to go, because I've been there and I know what the noise does to individual officers and first responders. It beats them down and their families are affected. And this is the best time that I could think for you and I to raise our voice about spiritual wellness and taking care of yourself and the things that you do with your self-care message. It's really, as I talk to police officers, and I still do a lot of the academy style presentations, it's really tough for them right now. And I'm going to be vocal about that. And people might take that to mean it's political. It's not political at all. No one stands for diversity any more than I do and my organization does. It has nothing to do with that. It's all about the right thing to do. The right thing to do is to embrace people that you want to embrace you. And we believe in teaching not the golden rule, but the platinum rule. Don't treat others like you want to be treated, because sometimes you have bad days. Let's talk about treating others like they'd want to be treated. And that's really the way it should be. If we start getting back to that in America and actually caring for one another, I think we can find solutions. But we've got to get politics out of policing, and we've got to get politics out of public safety and first responders in order to move forward.
I couldn't agree with you more. And it is a challenge, as we all know. And like you say, though, we need to make our voices loud and our messages loud. And I think part of it, too, is one of the things that I've had on my scratch pad over here next to my desk is this concept of we need a medium for a positive message.
Yeah,
we need law enforcement officers, firefighters, you know, and more so with law enforcement officers. They're the ones getting the beat down. A place where they can tap into some positive messages.
That's right. I agree with that 100%. And you know, we hope that not only we don't want to just be the organization that's only doing that. We want to join forces with other people who want to join that messaging. And, you know, it doesn't matter. You know, the one thing that's interesting, you know, when I was in policing and did government work, you know, it's almost like you had to be cautious about what you say. Because you actually work for an organization or within a government entity. But, you know, I am in the best place that I've ever been in life because now it doesn't matter. I don't really care. I mean, you know, I don't get paid to be a soldier. I get paid to help lead soldiers. And that's that's what I intend to do the rest of my career. And if I go out in a flame, I go out in a flame. But there's no reason to try to deny what's right. And that's exactly what I ask people to do. Just stand up for what's right. If you want to be treated that way in your occupation, then I understand you feeling that way, but nobody wants to be treated that way. And so there's no reason why we just can't talk about humanistic behavior. That's what it's based on. It's based on humanistic behavior. And that's what we've got to emphasize. And we do that in our organization. We stand by that.
Oh, absolutely. And let me switch gears on you a little bit, Bobby, and talk about your family. You know,
I don't mind telling you, I've raised three kids. I live in the Outer Banks of North Carolina. I've got three, I've raised three millennials. So that's why my hair is salt and pepper. But they've been challenging, but they're great kids. You know, I took them on as a single dad and, you know, out of a divorce and it's been very, very uplifting for me to have, you know, family around me and actually, I have my son visiting now in the Outer Banks. I live in the Outer Banks of North Carolina. So it's really good. And I really think to value family is the start of wellness. And I really think that's important. But thanks for asking about the family. Everybody's doing well. And we're moving along and we're trying to, you know, navigate some of this change in society, just like everybody else. So.
Yes. Yeah. Now, where are your children located around the country?
I have a daughter in Houston, Texas, working for a company there. My son is in Atlantic Beach or Jacks Beach, Florida, visiting this week. And my youngest daughter is up in Spotsylvania, Virginia, near the battlefields. So I have them in three different states, and that's why I keep my cell phone on all the time.
That's right. Now, you said you were a single father. I think that perked up some people's ears. And I'm not sure if I shared this with you, but I went through a divorce when my oldest was 16, my youngest was 7, and I became a single father. You know, and it was, you know, strange for some people to hear that. Yeah, the children came with me, you know, and it sounds like. Could you talk a little bit about how old your children's? Were and things like that and what that was
sure.
Like.
Mike, two of them were in their teen years and you know, my youngest daughter was I believe 10 at the time, but you know, we went through a phase with a lot of dysfunction as a family. Mm-hmm. And you know, I went through my own therapy to try to get over that. It was during the latter part of my police career, and for those people that are experiencing that, please know that, you know, don't be scared to reach out for help. I mean, you need to talk this through, and you need to talk it through with a person who can give you some solutions and not really just listen to the blame. And so when I went through that process, at first my goal was to really save my family. And then I really realized that probably was not going to work the way I wanted it to. And so then I needed to save my children. Last but not least, I needed to save myself. And that should have been first, but you don't realize that when you're going through it. I'm sure you had those same feelings. You try to hold on to what's important. You try to hold on to what you value most. And I think family it ranks right up there with me. So when things don't work out like that, you know, you have a sense of failure. You feel like, okay, this is not the way it was written up to be. Nobody can follow a perfect script when it comes to people. You know, we're damaged, and sometimes the damages take a longer to heal for some than they do others, and it leads to a lot of dysfunction. And I, you know, it was a hard time for us, as you're well aware, you went through it. But the you know, there's always light in the morning. And, you know, when you make that decision to try to get yourself together, then you can move to higher pastures. And that's what happened. And it's a period of life that, you know, is still sometime. It never goes away. It's like a bruise that never heals. But I will tell you that if you're really committed, you can move to the next level. In my work, the books, the things that I've been able to be involved in my life have taken me to another level where I feel like that I just want to help others that are going through the storm, because we all go through them.
Oh, absolutely. And I imagine this, the spiritual wellness piece of your spirituality, your faith, right. I'm sure it played a role in that.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, I think that one thing in spiritual wellness, we don't have to be perfect. And I think that's the issue, that one thing that spiritual wellness helps us, and it's okay to fall down, because as long as you're able to get back up, and sometimes getting back up, you can't do it on your own. I mean, you have to believe in something bigger than you. And that's really what spiritual wellness is all about, having that, you know, internal impact of your own to say that, you know, no, I can't do this on my own. I either, you know, need, you know, some guidance, I need a greater source to lean on to make this happen. And so that's really the core of spiritual wellness. That's what it's all about. It's not making it all about you. It's making it about, you know, having the right positive energy in your life and positive influence in your life to where you know where to go in the eye of the storm. And that really is the core of it.
Oh, absolutely. And I love the piece about the positive energy. I'm a big studier of positive psychology, and when we think about that positive energy, that sort of is in alignment with this, what many of us around the nation and are collaborating on, is trying to smash the stigma of mental health, right?
That's exactly right. That you know, and it's really difficult, because the question of mental health, especially when it comes to first responders, tends to be all over the map. I mean, it's not really clearly defined. You know, I believe that there are people that, you know, have a sense of a personality disorder in their life, and they may not be in the mental aspect or be treated as a mental health patient. I do think we do a disservice to mental health in this country. We basically, you know, peg them to be the most violent people, the people that you can't deal with. And there are millions of people that experience some mental health problems in America every day. And we've got to do a better job of prevention of mental health issues. And I think that should start young. We also need to do a much better job of intervention once we recognize a person is in need of help. I mean, it's, you know, if you ever had family members that have experienced this, and many of people listen to me have, you've got to really understand that it's not something that people choose. It's a road that's hard for them. And I think we need to stand in the gap for people. And I think if we do that more as a country, then we would have far less issues with first responders when they have to go out into the community and deal with this. It's been a long time coming that we recognize that this is an issue in response. And I'm hoping that we can do better as a country to prepare people to deal with it.
No, I completely agree with you. And I compare it to, I mean, how many years ago, wasn't that many, that to where preventive health checkups, you know, I think it was underneath the Obamacare, that it went to zero copay. Like, essentially, no excuses. It doesn't cost you a thing to go to the doctor and have your annual physical.
That's correct, right? Yeah.
And why do we do that? Because we want to get ahead of the curve on any type of diagnosis of a disease. You know, catch it early, success is more likely. What I would like to see, and I talk about, is that why aren't we doing that for mental health? You know, why are we waiting until something breaks down so much to where it's like, oh my gosh, where do we turn? And then it's like, you call mental health, you call the therapist, counselor, and you're on a 6-week wait. You know, it's like people that have these issues, They don't have 6 weeks to wait. They want to deal with it now. And I'm starting to think, like with our first responders, is if we could start including, you know, include that in the annual exams, is a mental health checkup.
Absolutely. And I, you know, as we started out our conversation today, I mean, I think first of all, first responders have to know that it does have an impact on your emotional and mental ability to really, you know, understand, you know, the up and now when you're dealing with nothing but, you know, dysfunction within communities. And I think that seeing people at their worst is, you know, it can be translated one or two ways, but a lot of people take that to the point where, well, it just pulls them down. They can't overcome some of the ideas. I think the other issue that we have is that we have to make this, as you say, more available. It's almost like a stigma that we talk about mental health. The problem with mental health is we don't talk about it until people are in trouble. What I want to do is I want to advocate mental health prevention, you know, stress management, anger management, things that can be even taught at the K through 12 level in our society. I mean, people get to a point where they act out either physically or verbally, and it tends to happen, you know, as stress and anxiety wears on people over and over again. And one of the things we do in our de-escalation training is I use a cup of water to fill it up, you know, for each stressor that a person in the community faces. And then I ask them to walk across the room without spilling it, because that's what we ask people to do. We don't understand that people's cups are full. And the noise that we hear from the media every single day, our social networking, everything that's going on in this country does nothing to take any water out of that cup. You've got to be intentional about that in your own life. And that's what really concerns me, because we'll take people that act out in any way, shape, or form, and we'll say that they're mental. Well, the bottom line is, it's not everyone who acts out has a mental issue, but they do have some strong anxiety, stress, and personality disorders that need to be addressed. So that happens. And so we have to really, I think from a prevention perspective, we have to look at how can we take the water out of people's cups in our society so they don't get to the point where they have to be treated with medication and other things to help them deal with society.
I love that. Take the water out of the cup, because you're right. And when we watch the news or social media, generally it's people trying to put water in our cup.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the noise is very hard. It's very difficult. I even find that I have to turn it off myself, and I try to stay informed, because we deal with a lot of, you know, violence issues in America, but it's not the issues that really, it's the interpretation of the issues that creates the problem for me. You know, you can hear the same situation 40 different times on 40 different channels. So I don't know sometimes who's telling the total truth. And we need to start questioning that in the media. That's important.
You mean there is someone out there telling the total truth?
Still looking, Donnie. I'm still looking.
I know it. Hey, let me ask you, in your career, Bobby, can you tell me a story about how maybe you helped someone rebalance their lives? Like if you saw that whether their physical health's going downhill, their family life's going downhill, or their spiritual health, you know, you have a story out there that maybe you took someone, put your arm around them and, you know, help them along the path a little bit.
Sure. There are a couple that come to mind. I mean, first of all, one of the best trainings I've ever had was hostage negotiations. And okay. I served in that position for 18 years as a lead negotiator at the police department. And I was called out. I was the person that was called out. Back then, we didn't have any really support for even our own people as it dealt with some of these issues that we talk about today. But I can remember responding to scenes where officers had been totally distraught over police shootings. And there was one in particular where one officer had been involved in two shootings in less than 2 weeks. And absolutely justified. But what we were doing is we were actually putting him in the back of the car and taking his gun and everything like that. And we were just dehumanizing our own people when it came to them doing what they're supposed to be doing in their job. And so I pulled up on the scene and I asked the sergeant who was dealing with this individual, can please let him out of the car so I can talk to him for a few minutes. And so I was able to walk with this officer for just a little while and talk with him about how I want to be there for your family. I want to be there for you. I want to stand in the gap, because you're going to have so many self questions about yourself. And what that led us to do, that one incident led us to start what we call the Police Employee Support Team. And this was years and years ago, probably in the early 80s. I know I'm dating myself, but it was before anybody set up trauma care for first responders. That had not been heard of. Nobody wanted to really talk about what their experience was like. And so I was able to help a young officer who was ready to turn it in and throw in the towel. And he went on to actually become a commander in the police department, and always stayed in touch and always thanked me for that interaction. But again, it's just being in the right place at the right time and being blessed to be able to be an instrument for someone. But that was important for that officer. And eventually it helped the department, because we were able to start that initiative.
That is awesome. Yeah. Hey, Bobby, speaking of your books and all the organizations that you're involved in and things like that, where could people go to get more information on this?
They can reach out to me directly at Bobby Kipper at solve, S-O-L-V-E, violence.com. That's my personal email address. And we do a lot of traveling and speaking, and, you know, we're honored when we get asked. And, you know, roll call again is if they want to get any of the books, they can actually just go online and just Google roll call spiritual wellness for today's law enforcement officer. That book's available at a number of where they would buy their books. Also, we have a number of other books. One of them, I think you were reading, Performance Driven Thinking.
Yep.
I think that's the one that's really about, you know, driving you to the next level in your personal and professional life. And that's an interesting story, because I just wrote that book, didn't think it was going to turn into a business book. And now business has just totally embraced it. So we're going to be doing some mindfulness training with that for first responders. And I'm really excited about that as well.
Excellent. Yeah. I think we're all excited about that. That is great. Is there anything that as we come toward the close here, is there anything that I did not ask you that you wished I would have, or something you'd like to spend a little bit more time on?
No, I think we're good. I just want to let everybody know that I don't really look at myself as any superhero at all. I just, you know, I'm honored and I'm just blessed. And I really don't want even this podcast and the things that we do to be about me. I just want everybody that's listening to this to know that, you know, you're special, you're important, you're worthwhile, and that you have a voice and you have a story. And I just try to encourage people, especially those that have come after me in policing and fire service. Don't be afraid to share your story. Don't be afraid to talk about how your life is impacting you, and try to find some light at the end of the tunnel so that you could positively impact others. And that would be what I would leave your audience today. I mean, we all have a message. Let's craft it and join our arms and do it the right way and try to save people right now who are hurting in our society. And many of them, obviously, are first responders. So that's really a push that I want to emphasize for everyone.
Absolutely. And hey, Bobby, as you know, I'm so big on the work-life balance of self-care and family and all that. I want to ask you something.
All right.
You have three children, and imagine them listening to this podcast, or if one day we put it out on YouTube, mm-hmm. down the road, your voice, your story to them. What would you like for them to know, how you feel about them? Your three.
Well, first of all, I'd let them know right up front how much I love and I support each one of them. And my goal in life is always to be there to stand in the gap where they need it. And I would always tell them to basically, as I've always told my kids, there are two things I could promise you. You'll never be homeless and you'll never be hungry. And I really want to emphasize that. But I'm your biggest cheerleader. I'm the person that's always rooting for you every day. And in the words of Russell Wilson, who's a quarterback for the Seattle Seahawks, I share that type of information with my children because they understand sports. And I would like to say to each one of them, you need to get up every day to win. There's not an exception to that thinking. Get up every day to win the day. And if you win the day, the more days you win, you're going to end up in first place. And that's what I wish for my kids.
That is awesome. Thank you for that. And One of my traditions in this Get Balanced podcast, Bobby, is I like to toss over to my guests if you'd like to close this podcast out with a blessing to first responders.
I would. Let me bless first responders as we leave. You know, Lord, we just pray for those people, not only who listen to these words, but people that will be impacted by Dr. Donnie and his work and the things that he's doing on a regular basis to try to spread hope and try to spread hope where there's a world of despair. Lord, we just hope that both of us can really be messengers of light and hope to not only first responders, but all those people we come in contact with. We are just vessels and we owe this all to you. And Lord, I just pray you protect everyone, especially all of our first responders who are listening to this and those that we'll be coming in contact with in the future. In this name we pray, amen.
Amen. Thank you very much, Bobby. And man, I tell you, I truly appreciate you, all you do. I can't wait to read more of your writings. And truly, you have so much going on. And when you say you're blessed, I absolutely say, yes, it certainly seems that way. So,
well, thank you, Donnie. I'm looking forward to you working with us as well. So,
thank you very much. And we'll be talking soon.
Okay, take care.
Hey, if you're a firefighter, law enforcement officer, or EMS professional who enjoys this podcast and would like some help with your work-life balance, you need to check out my Get Balanced program. Not sure if you are balanced or not? Join me over at DonnieHutchinson.com and take the quiz. Together, we are going to get you balanced.